overview of the halachic issues that are involved with organ donation. For reasons, I mean, this is obviously a very large topic. First of all, because you have to have at least some sense of the medical realities to even begin the discussion, and then because there's a lot of different issues. So forgive me that we're going to just simply be, you know, touching on various things and not going to be able to go into too much depth, but at least to give you a sense of what the stakes are. Organ donation is one of those topics. It comes up in two contexts. Right? It comes up in the context of people who, in an act of tremendous chesed. Tremendous chesed, right? Sometimes it's not just tremendous chesed, it's minor chesed, right? When you're giving blood, fundamentally that's an organ donation or a tissue donation, right? Or when you get yourself checked for a bone marrow match, right? I don't know if anyone has ever done that, but you should at the first opportunity. Because once you're in the computer, then you don't need to do it again. But get yourself checked for a bone marrow match so that someone who has, some version of cancer, what they do when they get certain kinds of chemotherapy treatments, they essentially destroy, for leukemia, for all kinds of lymphoma, they destroy the patient's bone marrow. Bone marrow is where blood cells are made, and replace it with a healthy person's bone marrow. If it works, then the person will start to produce healthy blood, and that can be a way to overcome all kinds of cancers related to blood. So those sort of donations, right, are basically painless, not besides, a needle, and can be life-saving, as I'm sure you're aware, and cost you, very little, but it's nevertheless, it's an act of chesed to participate, and I don't think you need me to know that these sort of things are very important. So those are also, in principle, right, those are also transplants of a sort. But when we talk about organ transplants, we're usually talking about, larger scale things. Just so you know, that you can transplant a whole lot of different kinds of tissue. You can transplant, obviously, if you have blood and bone marrow, you can transplant skin, we'll talk about that a little later. You can transplant vascular tissue, veins and arteries. These are mostly from cadavers. You can transplant bone, you can transplant tendons and muscular tissue sometimes a little bit too. But the main topic really is sort of internal organs, and there we're talking about a different kind of a question in terms of a situations where you're transplanting an organ either in an operation which is obviously has a certain degree of risk, or from a dead body, in which case there's a whole different set of questions that arise. And I want to address these two questions separately, because I think fundamentally the questions are there's different issues that arise in the context of both of them. So we're going to start by talking about organ donation from living donors. And then I think we'll sort of most, I think that the issue at hand for most people is not living, not the question of donating as a, maybe I don't want to say that. The issue which is relevant to everyone in the room is the question of if, God forbid, there was a tragedy last night. I don't know if you guys are in touch with the news, right? There was the Israeli army had a operation in Gaza that was basically went wrong, and there was a soldier killed last night. We don't know his name, or it was a secret. It was a secret mission. There was a secret unit, so the whole thing has been trying to kept under wraps. But in any case, the issue that is relevant to anyone is, God forbid, you are no longer amongst the living, then your organs are an opportunity for truly an incredible number of people can be helped with them, from your retina to your liver to your lungs to your parts of your intestines, your kidneys, obviously your pancreas. They can now harvest, and of course hearts can be harvested. That is an issue which is relevant to everyone in the room, relevant to the people who have, I don't know, the tzaddikim amongst you, is the question of, while, you know, tomorrow, going and seeing if you can donate an organ while alive to a person who is in terrible straits, right? People who need to receive organs from donors are not exactly in peak condition, to put it mildly, and you truly change their lives radically. The most common one that we hear about is kidney donation. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. Well, let's just talk about that first. We'll talk about that, the medical side of it first. We're going to start with the notion of living donors. And just to give you sort of the background, what parts of your body are potentially donatable, right? We don't take skin from living people. It's not necessary. There's no really added value to it. We take essentially kidneys, intestines. It's a very small amount of people. You know, it's not a very common thing. It's not usually what we talk about. But you can give a piece of your intestine to someone who has a shortened intestine and has had trouble digesting food. But more to the point, you can donate a kidney. You can also donate a lobe of a lung, sort of amazingly, and a part of your liver. It turns out that you can lose part of your liver and it will regenerate, and you can lose one of the five lobes of your lung. It won't regenerate, but the rest of the lung, the other lobes will enlarge and expand to fill the space. All of those things are possible today. Obviously, heart transplants are not possible from living donors. We'll talk about that later on. But there's still a difference between kidney and liver and heart and lung transplants, in the sense that kidney transplants, they're not risk-free, in the sense that you're undergoing, you know, an intrusive operation with general anesthesia. But the risks are pretty limited. Anyone who would be willing to undergo an operation for something, you know, minor, for, you know, a minor surgery. So it basically amounts to minor surgery. And the downside is that you have only one kidney afterwards. And a person can live perfectly fine and healthy life with only one kidney. Essentially, you only need one kidney. For whatever reason, God gave us two kidneys. But the only lack is that, of course, you don't have that backup kidney if, God forbid, something goes wrong. But in principle, kidney donations are the easiest ones in terms of the side effects. Lung and liver from living donors are pretty rare. Their risks are higher. In fact, there's only been a few hundred cases, so it's not that well studied. It's not really clear what the long-term effects are on the donor, particularly in the case of the lungs. The liver is a little bit better studied. It's actually fairly relatively new of all the various transplant surgeries. The notion of a partial liver transplant is relatively, you know, 20 or 30 years. But it seems to work. In general, I think the issue for most people, most of the time, most of the people I probably know 7 or 8 people who have given kidneys. I don't know anyone who's given anything else. I think it's usually family members for the other one. Okay. So that's so the issue is in terms of a living, donating an organ while one is going about one's life. The basic issues are you allowed to risk your life in order to save or perhaps, in general, it's to save, right? The prognosis for people who need kidneys or livers and lungs are always bad, right? So it's particularly livers and lungs, they're basically on death's door. People who need kidneys, who don't have any kidneys or functioning kidneys, can live for a fairly long time on dialysis, but it is not an easy existence, and they certainly can be understood as people whose lives are in danger. In any case, are you allowed to risk your life in order to save somebody else's? And furthermore, there's a separate issur besides that mitzvah of mishmartem od nafshotechem, right? The mitzvah to preserve your own life. There's a issur chabala. You're not allowed to do harm to yourself unless there's a good reason. And those are the two issurim that we have to think about. Against those issurim, we have the mitzvah of lo ta'amod adam re'echa, right? That one is not allowed to stand aside, right? You're not allowed to stand aside at the blood of your fellow. Whereas there's a mitzvah to save somebody who is in danger. In fact, this mitzvah extends not just to physical danger, it extends to spiritual danger, it also extends to emotional danger. It also is not merely, it's in Chazal, it is connected to the mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda, right? That is a mitzvah of returning someone's lost object. So if you have to return someone's lost object, all the more so do you need to return, you know, their lost physical safety. And as we all know, en lecha davar, it's not necessarily a mitzvah, but it's a principle in halacha, en lecha davar ha'omed bifnei pikuach nefesh, right? Pikuach nefesh doche Shabbat, or even Shabbat, which is a very severe prohibition, pikuach nefesh overrides it, and we are mechalel Shabbat in order to save a life. Right? And just to show how important this is, the Rambam, a very famous passage, I'll read to you, says, v'asur litzmahamea michilul Shabbat. Right? One must not delay in order to avoid doing mechalel Shabbat in a situation of pikuach nefesh. L'chole sheish bo sakana, and a person who's sick and in danger. Right? As the Torah says, these are the mitzvot that a person shall do and live by them. And then he adds on, following the Midrash, mitzvot were not given to die for, they're given to live for. Right? The laws of the Torah are not vengeance in the world, but rather mercy and grace and peace in the world. He used a very strong word here. And those heretics who say that the Chilul Shabbat in this situation is prohibited, Alein Hasatuv Omer, upon them, the Navi says, V'gam Anin, this is the Navi Yechezkel, V'gam Anin Atati Lehem Chukim Lo Tovim Mishpatim Lo Yichyuben. And I also have given them bad laws and rules that they shall not live by them. In other words, anyone who, in the interest of protecting Shabbat, avoids desecrating the Shabbat in order to save a life, is carrying out bad laws and laws that you should not live by. Because that is the chilul rather than the actual chilul Shabbat. I remember once, I will never forget it, when somebody was sick on Yom Kippur when I was in Yeshiva many, many years ago, before you guys were all born. He was sick on Yom Kippur, but he was trying to fast anyway. And he passed out on Yom Kippur. And Rav Amital, I'll never forget this because it was shocking, came over, and he was okay, but he said they woke him up, and he yelled at him, and he says, Chilalta et Yom HaKippurim, in front of the whole Yeshiva. Chilalta et Yom HaKippurim, right? You should have been drinking today, and you weren't drinking, and that, as far as he was concerned, he did it very demonstrably, right? You were mechalel Yom Kippur in that you didn't, in that you fasted. And so the idea of pikuach nefesh as being sort of a uber value is, I think, well established, and I'm not going to elaborate upon it anymore. So, in a sense, the question isn't, in the case of living donors, in the case of the fact that we have somebody who is unquestionably in a situation of of pikuach nefesh. The question is not really whether or not one is allowed to donate one's organ, assuming that one can donate an organ in a situation where there's minimal risk, which is certainly true in the case of at least kidneys and possibly also lungs and livers. The question is whether or not one is not obligated to donate organs. It's very reasonable to suppose that everyone here is obligated to donate an organ at the first possible moment to a person. I mean, there are people in the list, right? It's not the people waiting for kidneys is much longer than the potential donors, right? So if everybody understood that there was an obligation to go and donate a kidney, then we could solve the kidney problem in a week. Well, it would take longer because by the time they got the operations up and running, it would take longer. So it's certainly not an unreasonable thing to suggest that one is obligated to donate any organ that you can donate in a situation where it does not radically affect your life. That being said, the poskim have not taken that track. And the source for it is a fascinating tshuva of the Radbaz, Rav David ben Zimra, who was the chief rabbi of Egypt about 400 years ago. And he was asked this question, which I guess in the reality of Jewish life is actually a real question. Thank God not today, but at other periods in time. And he asked, he was asked a question of a person who was brought before some sort of political leader slash bandit chieftain, and said, either I will cut off your hand or I will kill somebody else. Right? Now, the famous Gemara in Sanhedrin about the idea that Pikuach Nevesh has three mitzvot that it's not, does not override. What are they?
What are the
right? Gilur Ariyot, Avodah Zarah, and Shfichut Damim. Right? Avodah Zarah, we understand. Gilur Ariyot, we understand. Shfichut Damim, the explanation for it is, the Gemara says, My chazik, the dama didach sumakfe. How do you know that your blood is redder than his blood? Right? You can't kill him to save your life, right? Obviously in a situation where he's not a rodef, right? He's not threatening your life, but he's a third party, right? Like this scenario, right? There's the bandit chieftain, there's person A and person B, and person A is not allowed, essentially, to give up his life to save person B, in either direction, because there's no way of establishing whose blood is so much, so to speak, redder, and therefore we sort of let the chips fall where they may, and we don't take action. There's a question we're going to see in a second about whether that one is allowed to take action, but you certainly don't have to. That being said, what happens here? We're not talking about a situation where you're going to get killed if the person. No, they're going to kill the other person. All you need to do is to let them take your hand. Right? It would be an interesting movie scene. I'm sure there is a movie about this, because there's a movie about every kind of weird idea that anybody ever had. But the Radbaz addressed this 400 years ago, and he argued that no, that we do not require you to lose your hand even to save another person's life. And he has a long, it's not that long, but he has, I think I wrote, how many? 7 different reasons why not. I don't want to go through them all. Most of them have to do with the fact that losing a hand is high risk, right? Certainly in 400 years ago, it was very high risk, right? The chances of infection or of, tremendous blood loss and things like that mean that you're not required to go to that risk of your life in order to save somebody else. But he has another, and this I want to. He wants to argue basically that there's a difference between Chilul Shabbat, which is what he calls an honest sakanat evar shabbat. It's an honest daati mishmaya. Right, and there's when the halacha is that in order to save a limb, in principle, right, in practice this doesn't actually ever happen, but right, in principle, in order to save a limb, you don't have the chalal shabbat either. And if I have a situation where I know with certainty, right, that I will lose a hand, but I will not die. But in practice, you never know, so therefore it never comes up. But if I could create a scenario like that, then you're not allowed the chalal shabbat to save the hand. So he's saying, so why, if you're not allowed the chalal shabbat to save the hand, why are you not obligated to lose the hand to save another person's life? And he answers, that in the case of the Shabbat, that's an honest da'ati mishmaya, right? That's not talking about a situation where the loss is coming from another person. It's coming from heaven. In other words, God decided to put you in this situation. But you don't necessarily have to go into it. You don't have to volunteer to do it. So he argues you don't have to volunteer to lose a limb or an organ, even in order to save someone's life. Though he says at the end, and then at the end he says, right, that the ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. And the ways of the Torah must follow human reason. That's quite an extraordinary line. ואיך יעלה על דעתנו שאניח אדם מסמת אינו לחתוך את ידו או לא כדי שלא ימיתו את חברו? How can we even consider the idea of a person blinding himself or cutting off his own hand or his foot in order that his fellow not be killed? He basically rejects it because it's just unthinkable. And therefore he says, in principle, you don't have to do it. אלא מידה חסידות. Right, it is an act of chasidut, an act of chesed, and happy is he who could live up to that standard. But he argued, if there's a risk to your own life, that is a chasid shoteh. That is a foolish chasid. Right, that's the chasid shoteh. The classic example is the person who sees a woman drowning in the lake, and he says, mixed swimming. And he doesn't go in to save her, right? That's a chassid shoteh, that's a foolish chassid. Right? That's being, you know, foolishly religious. And so he's saying the same thing. You're not allowed to risk your life, even to save someone else. The sfek adideh adik mivadai lechavreh, right? The suffix for yourself is more significant. Your responsibility to your own life override even in a situation when somebody else is certainly going to die. It's worth noting that this last question of whether or not one is allowed to obviously one is not obligated to risk your life to save someone else, but whether one is not is allowed, and this might be the case in, for example, in lung transplants where the research really isn't in as to how safe it is one allowed, right? Can you imagine a case of, you know, a child who has, you know, lost lung functioning and a parent wants to donate a lobe in order to save them? That is the scenario which comes up. Are you allowed to do it, which is assuming that it's considered to be risk, taking a risk with your life, are you allowed to do it? So it's a machloket between poskim, but also between, really comes down to the Rambam and Balei Tosfot, but I'm not going to go into details as I promised. And in general, the accepted practice is not like the Radbaz, but generally the accepted practice is that if one wants to volunteer to risk one's life, one is allowed to, in order to save another person's life, even though it's taking a chance with one's own life. So in that situation, though, it certainly would not be regarded as an obligation. The Radbaz goes as far to say that in no case are organ donations obligated, though I have to say that the Radbaz's argument is very... it's hard, I guess, in terms of public policy, it would be hard to say anything else. But it's not. It's a very weak argument. It's not based on a whole lot. Once we've got past the barrier of the notion of risk, right? If we can keep the risk minimal, then there's certainly an argument to be made that there is some sort of an obligation here, but that is not the policy of the poskim in general. In general, the policy is that it's not an obligation, it is just a midat chasidut. Okay. Questions so far? Now, I see that Rav Ezra is here. Rav Ezra is a Rav Ezra Schwat is a person who donated a kidney, so he probably knows a lot more about this than I do. So when he comes up to speak, I'm sure you can ask him questions about both the experience of it, and also I'm quite sure he's well aware of the halachic issues. So I'm sure he can shed some light on it as well. Benji, what do you want to say?
What about the halachas of needing to be buried with all your
people? Okay. I hate to say this, and people like to bring this up. I don't know what they're talking about. I really don't know where that idea comes from. I'm sure that is written down somewhere, right? But not in any of the books that I know. Right? Do you when you take a haircut, do you preserve the hair to make sure you're buried with it?
No.
No. What about your toenail?
No.
Okay. So
those regrow.
Right? Okay.
Well,
let's say an amputee.
What's against?
Right?
Let's say
an amputee. Somebody, God forbid, in the traffic accident, and they lose a limb. Do they save the limb to make sure it goes into the grave with them?
Well, that's
not
like a
b'di'evad
versus like a
kill.
You have to.
No. You lost the limb, right? Nobody loses a limb on purpose.
Yeah,
right?
So
right? There are people like that, but they're nuts, right?
Yes.
But the similar thing, did you save the limb? No!
But people donate kidneys on purpose.
What?
You say once you lost the limb, it's already not part of you, so it doesn't matter. So
okay,
you're not allowed to lose a limb because you have to be buried with all your organs.
But who says?
You're not allowed to.
Who says?
I don't know.
I say, but the Chavra Kedisha keeps...
That's a bit weird.
Keeps
a... like a warehouse? With like a warehouse limb?
I'm
like
no, it's buried with the limb.
What's against
an
autopsy? Why can't you have an autopsy?
What? It's not because... Right, now autopsy is a whole other parsha which we have not... We are running low on time as it, right? There's in a second we're going to talk about this, okay? About the question of what to do with dead bodies. We're talking about a live body. Right? We're talking essentially about the equivalent of an amputated limb, right? Someone has, in a car accident, whatever it is, and they amputate the limb. There's still some tissue there, right? The limb, they don't like have like a closet in their house waiting for when they die so they can bury the lost hand limb. They just don't. They bury the limb. The limb is part of a human body. We treat it respectfully. But there's no idea of being buried with all of your limbs intact. That is not the issue of what we're going to call Mivul Hamet in a minute. But that is not an issue. That is part of I understand where it comes from. It comes from the idea of Tchiyat HaMitim, that you're going to be reborn, and you can be reborn in 1 second. Where'd my hand go? And I have to say that if God can raise the dead, I am quite certain he can handle the lost limb. And the idea that that's going to be like challenging for God is kfir, as far as I'm concerned. But that is truly, truly heresy, in my opinion. To believe that God can raise the dead, but he's not going to do well. What? Missing a limb? That's just too tough. So I don't know. I'm aware of this thing. I'm aware that people talk about it. As far as I'm concerned, it is not a thing. I never heard of it in any sort of authentic source. It's just like the thing that people say. Rafi.
So that, what's the deal with cremation? Like the idea that...
Okay, we're going to talk about that now. Okay, same thing. It's basically the same problem. That's not the deal with cremation either.
Rafi. Is there a difference halakhically between the risks you're allowed to take for a Jew and the risks you're allowed to take for a guy?
Yes, I will talk about that at the end. Okay. Donating now, we're now got to the like to the topic. Now I'm actually I'm not gonna have enough time for anything. The second part of this, of course, is donating from a dead donor, right? From a person who has died, and what they now call harvesting, which is probably not the best word, organs for a transplant to other people. And like I said, there's a lot of things that you can take. The issue here, and this is touching on what Benji and Rahi were saying, there's an iser called nivul hamet, right? If you want to go, in English, we would say desecration of a dead body, right? The reason Jews do not cremate, right? And it's usher to create a dead body under ordinary circumstances, because it's usher to desecrate a dead body, and because there's a mitzvah of kvura. There's a mitzvah to bury dead bodies. Right? And the family has a responsibility to see to it that their relative is buried properly. And it's also to see to it that the body is not mistreated. Right? This comes up a lot, the question of autopsies and things like that, and when is it appropriate to do an autopsy and when not. It's not my topic. Besides that, there's another issue, which is worth noting, that there's an isur hana'ah, right? One is not allowed to gain benefit from a dead body. Right? You can't use a dead body to prop up your books on your table, no matter how nice they look there. Now, in general, you're not allowed to gain benefit of any sort from a dead body. So, obviously, in the case of taking organs from a dead body, someone is getting a great deal of benefit from the dead body. But all these issues remember, we're in a pikuach nefesh situation in general. All these issues are basically, wiped out by pikuach nefesh. The really hard issue, which I'll get to in a little while, the really sort of big issue in the context of organ transplants from dead bodies is when are they considered to be dead? Because certain organs, particularly hearts and livers, essentially once blood flow, once they stops, they deteriorate very, very rapidly. So essentially the only way to harvest hearts and livers is when the heart is still beating. Right? Other tissues have a much longer, I don't know if shelf life is the wrong word, but in other words, they survive longer. Kidneys survive for several hours after a body after a person is dead, and even after the heart stops beating. So there's not, it's easier, right? The person can be as dead as dead can be without there being any question for a kidney, but for a heart or for a liver, that you really have to get to the very edge. You have to get to the question where the person is dead, and the second they're dead, you have to take it out, because you're not allowed, and I think this is quite understandable, right? There's a halacha that you're not allowed to, under any circumstances, to speed the death of anyone. And that's considered to be murder. Right? Someone is, even though a person is dying, under certain circumstances, you can passively sort of remove obstacles to their dying, but you're not allowed to do anything active, like removing his heart, which is exceptionally active, to speed their dying. That's considered to be murder. So you have to. So the question then is, when is a person considered to be dead? We will get to this in a moment. Yeah, answering questions first. There are two questions here. Yeah.
What about transplants are done skin grafts or not, life-saving?
That's my next point.
My understanding is when a person is brain dead, but heart still beating, the heart is only still beating because they have a machine that sort of.
We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
So the first question I want to talk about is situations where it's not necessarily pikuach nefesh. Right. The most obvious one is retinal transplant. Right. Can you? It's usher to desecrate a dead body and to mitzvah to bury every part of it, right? So, can you take the retina from a dead body in order to give somebody back his sight, right? And this is a question which is obviously very important to someone who needs a new retina. Some poskim indeed have argued that it's asur in a case where there's no pikuach nefesh to take any part of a dead body, even if it's going to return to somebody's sight. The mainstream position, though, it is permitted, and there's a series of different explanations as to why. One argument is that eyesight, right, that they quote a Gemara, that eyesight is connected to the heart, and people who are blind are at risk, and therefore it's kind of returning eyesight is like the kuaf nefesh. That's a very hard argument, I think, to make nowadays, but I think that the stronger arguments are that it's not considered to be, retinas are very tiny, right? It's pachot mikazai, right? It's, and that the iser of nivul hamet, or it's not considered to be desecration of a dead body to take just a retina. It's not considered, in fact, even the mitzvah of kvua doesn't count as it doesn't apply to less than a kazai. A third argument, which is sort of interesting, is since in the end of the day, the tissue continues to be alive, so it's not considered to be dead at all. Right? You're not desecrating a dead body. This part of the body is still alive. It's in somebody else's face, but it's still going to be alive, and therefore it's not chayav b'kvura, you're not obligated to bury it, nor is there nisur hana, because it's still living. In any case, that the mainstream position is that we do allow people to harvest retinas from dead bodies. You mentioned skin grafts. Skin grafts is almost always the case of Pekuach Nefesh. What's skin grafts? Skin grafts essentially are, they take from dead bodies, they can take a very, very thin layer of skin. Mostly, this is used to treat burn victims. Burn victims who have lost large swaths of skin, and they're at terrible risk of infection. And basically it's, entirely life-threatening. And it turns out that the one day maybe they'll invent artificial skin, I know they're working on it, but the best way to essentially preserve their body from infection is to take grafts of skin. They have a special machine that they take like 10 centimeter wide strips of skin from dead bodies, and they use that to seal the wounds, and they inject cells underneath the seal, which causes the growth of skin, because the skin grafts don't last, right? They're not, your body rejects them eventually, but it's not a permanent transplant, but it's enough to get to tide the person over until they can regrow their own skin, and that's absolutely life-saving. So that brings us back to the Pekuach Nefesh question. Somebody had another question? Can I continue? Okay. The really central question, though, of course, is the situation of Pekuach Nefesh. There is one position. It's famously the position of a 19th century German rabbi who wrote a book called Tzuk Binyan Tzion. I think it's Rabbi Yaakov Efflinger, if I'm not mistaken. And it was taken up again by Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, who was a 20th century posek from Manchester, and later on in Israel, from Israel, who wrote a book called Minchat Yitzchak. And they argued that even in situations of Pekuach Nefesh, even in situations where one's life would be saved by taking the organs from a dead person, the dead person is dead and is no longer chayav mitzvah. He's not responsible for the other side's Pekuach Nefesh. And though it's permitted to steal, right, if Benji was about to die, and the only way I could save him would be to steal somebody's stuff in order to save him, then I'm allowed to do that. But you're not allowed to steal, according to this position, that you're not allowed to steal from a dead person, like take his body parts, because you're permitted to steal from someone to save a life only if you repay them afterwards. And of course you can't repay somebody who's already dead. Now, that argument, in my opinion, is very hard to defend. It is an argument made by great chachamim, and certainly greater than me, so I'm not going to deny them that, but it's very odd, in my opinion, to think of taking an organ as stealing from the dead person. Right? It's very unclear to me at all whether we can even regard the dead person as the owner of his organs, or that... the whole question is that, in a certain sense, it's hard to make it even come up. In any case, according to this position, at least this part of it, it makes sense to say that if the person says explicitly while they're alive that they're willing to donate their organs, then the issue of stealing doesn't come up because it's not, they've agreed. There's no issue then. They have the ability. If they own their own organs after they're dead, they certainly own them while they're alive. And if they give up their organs, then that seems to work. And so in practice, what this amounts to is that since nowadays, and if we have time, we're not going to have time, but don't know, we can talk about what should be the policy, right? But in practice, the policy is that we, I don't know, maybe there are some countries where it's different, I don't, I didn't look into that. But in Israel and in the United States, and as far as I know, in England as well, and in Australia and South Africa, which is where everybody here is from, more or less, right? The policy is that the default is not to harvest organs unless there is explicit permission, either from the person who has, is from the deceased, or from his immediate family members. So the default is that we don't take the organs. So basically, all the questions only come up when someone has given explicit permission, and so then even according to the more muscular position, it seems to be that you can harvest organs, barring other other problems, which we'll get to in a second. So obviously, the more mainstream position, the position of almost all the post-game, is that in situation of pikuach nefesh, you can harvest organs. It seems to be, though, like I said, in practice, there's no way to force people to give up their organs or a family to give up their organs. It seems to me, straightforwardly, that mikaratin, we should force people to give up their organs. In other words, it's an obligation to give up your organs. Even though one is not obligated to anything once one is dead, it is an obligation if you are a person who has the authority over someone's organs, you're a close family member. It seems to me straightforwardly obvious, it's a situation of pikuach nefesh, that we should, the people are obligated to give up their organs. In practice, the post-scheme have not pursued this. In practice, the post-scheme have said that we don't force people, we just encourage them. I'm not really sure. I understand sort of the politics of it, but it seems to me pretty obvious that in an ideal situation, the default would be that we take people's organs and that we don't wait for them to agree. We assume that they agree, or we don't care if they agree, and we take the organs unless there's some overriding consideration from the outside, right? The fear, right? I mean, the fear that Benji mentioned before, that if I'm not buried with all my organs, what's going to happen to me with the Triat HaMitim, can be, I understand there are probably a lot of people who believe that and are worried about it. I think we can probably explain to them that is not a serious consideration. We probably should need to do it in a less mocking way than I just did before. But certainly people who have just lost a loved one, we need to be kinder than I am to Benji. But being kinder than I am to Benji isn't that hard. Okay. The really pressing question here, in the few minutes I have left, is what happens? There's two pressing questions. Okay. The first question I want to is we say that this pikuach nefesh is overrides the various isurim or mitzvot of kvura and nivul hamet and things like that, and therefore one should harvest organs. The question is, what situations count as pikuach nefesh? And now, in practice, this is not that big a question anymore, because the infrastructure for organ donation is very well established, and essentially we have lists of people who are waiting for organs, and the list is very long, and the organs are not nearly enough. So there's always going to be a person who is, you know, really in need, and it's a sort of an unequivocal situation of pikuach nefesh. Where this question does come up is what's called skin banks. Right now, skin grafts are something you need to give to people when they're very badly wounded, but they're not necessarily someone who is in desperate need of skin at any particular moment. The question is, when is it considered to be a situation of pikuach nefesh such that we will harvest skin from a cadaver, and skin can be preserved for a very long time. It's preserved in very low temperatures, can we harvest skin and essentially put it in the bank, because we know eventually there's going to be some kind of event where people are going to get burned, right? In Israel, this is particularly topical in the context of wars and piguim and chas v'shalom, all kinds of things like that. because very often those situations create burn wounds. And can we make a bank of skin by taking skin from cadavers? And that depends upon how we think about pikuach nefesh. There's a very famous tshuva of the Nodeh Behuda, who was asked about in the early 18th century, in the 1700s, I think 1737, something like that. So he was asked about medical students wanting to do to cut up bodies for anatomy, to learn anatomy. And the argument that was made was that, well, if they learn anatomy better, they'll be able to save more lives. And therefore, it's pikuach nefesh, and they should be allowed to do it. And he argued against that. He said, no, they should not be allowed to do it, because the principle of pikuach nefesh only applies when there's a chole b'faneinu, when there's a sick person who is right in front of us. And there's a sick person who is in front of us. Right? In front of us doesn't necessarily mean he's lying on the ground right now, but that he exists right now, and we can address him with this issue, with this action. It's definitely, by the way, it's obvious that we need to put some kind of constraint on pikuach nefesh. There has to be a point where we say, ah, that's not pikuach nefesh, because otherwise everything is pikuach nefesh. Right? According, if there's no constraint, if there's no level by which we say, no, that's not pikuach nefesh, then you wouldn't be allowed to cross the street, because you have a mitzvah protecting your life, and there's a certain level of risk of, you know, doing anything, so you wouldn't be allowed to do that. So obviously there are certain things that you're allowed to do, even though it enters in. The question is, how far do we go? When do we say, this is not pikuach nefesh, this is just, you know, a forethinking policy, but it's not considered to be saving a life. So the Nodeh Behuda's principle was, it has to be a person who is right now at risk. The problem with that is, of course, that in the context of public policy, and in fact many poskim sort of lined up with that Nodeh Behuda, that is like the classic tshuva on the topic. Famously, Rav Moshe Feinstein also essentially endorsed that position. In Israel, it's sort of interesting, the Chazon Ish, writing in the 40s, disagreed. Right? And the Chazon Ish said that, and this has to do, I think, with the fact that in Israel, even the Chazon Ish, who was certainly not a Zionist in the normal sense of the word, but the Jewish community was an independent entity. It was making policy for itself in all manifestations, including public policy. And this is before the state, but it was... And the Chazon Ish, followed by many poskim in Israel, including famously Rav Goren, argued that even when there's future, there's potential cholim, right? People who are going to be in a state of pikuach nefesh in the future, that also is a justification for what we call pikuach nefesh, that is doche other mitzvah. And they argue that it is permitted to make do things like a skin bank. That is indeed the policy in Israel, and I think in most Jewishly run hospitals who care about these things in the United States, that we take these things in terms of, you know, things which can be expected to happen in the future, and with a reasonable degree of certainty, are considered to be immediately present dangers, and therefore one's allowed to make skin banks in order to preserve skin for future problems. But that is a little bit more controversial than some of the other things. Finally, the last and perhaps the most controversial and discussed issue has to do with brain death. And when is a person considered to be dead? And as I said before, this does not apply to all kinds of organ donations. Most organ donations, it's not an issue because they can wait until you're thoroughly dead. Anyone know the Princess Bride? Yeah. Right? There's mostly dead and there's totally dead. Okay, not most of you guys are just ignorant. Afterwards, when you have some time and you're not learning, it's a mitzvah to go and watch the movie The Princess Bride. It is a wellspring of deep insights into reality. Ask Benji.
Can I quote you on that?
Okay.
It's great.
Okay, so there's a scene there where the hero is dead, but he's only mostly dead so that he can be revived. In any case, so like I said, in the case of heart transplants and liver transplants, a person needs to have a beating heart until the very moment of the transplant, in order for the tissue not to deteriorate, right, the person who needs to receive the transplant really doesn't need to receive another damaged heart. That would be sort of a waste of time. The question then is, what is the definition of being dead for this purpose? In the Gemara, there are two different sugyot which tell us something about this. Once again, Yoma, which is about pikuach nefesh. It's about somebody who's been buried under a collapsed building. So you're allowed on Shabbat to essentially, you know, remove the stones and things like that in order to save him. But eventually, and this happens all the time, even today with earthquakes and things like that, you uncover people who are dead. So what happens when you're taking off the rubble, and eventually you ascertain, is the person dead? Now, once the person is established to be dead, there's no reason to continue uncovering the rubble unless there's somebody else in there, obviously. But so the halacha the Gemara there talks about the fact that the test of death is kol asher nishmat ruach chayim be'apav, the pasuk in Bereishit, right? That the person whose the breath of life is in his nose, in other words, breathing is the test of death. So you can uncover rocks until you get to his face, and then you can see whether he's breathing, and if he's still breathing, you continue. If he's no longer breathing, he's considered to be dead, and you cease. Now, obviously, in our reality, this is not, strictly speaking, the case, in the sense that many, many people, as Benny, who's no longer here, but he was here before, has done many times, people can stop breathing and be revived. And there's no doubt that they're not dead in that situation. That there is, when you can do artificial respiration and preserve someone's life, then you're absolutely obligated to do that. But nevertheless, when the function of breathing ceases, then we can, and if someone is no longer able to breathe, then we can describe that person as dead. Another situation is the Mishnah in Ohalot, which is about Tumat Meh. When does a dead body mitame? And there it mentions the possibility that of a person whose head has been cut off, right? They've been decapitated, but even though their body is still twitching and moving, and even though their heart is still beating, not for very long, they're considered to be tame from that moment that they're decapitated. So here we have another standard. Decapitation is also considered to be death. That's going to be relevant in a moment. So, there is an opinion of many poskim, which argues that these two gemaras are not the final word, and the sort of established way to establish death in the world and in the Torah is pulse. So a person's heart is beating, they are not dead. And therefore, taking a heart while it's still beating, or taking a liver while the heart is still beating, is murder. And that is a very strict standard of death. And their argument is that even though the person's brain is damaged beyond repair, in the end of the day, we are not in charge of life and death. Life and death is in the hands of God. And until the heart ceases to beat, you are not allowed to harvest organs from that body, which means essentially you can never harvest hearts or livers from cadavers. In the other position, which is the position which was worked out famously by the Rabbanut HaRashit, Avraham Shapira and Mordechai Eliyahu in the 80s, when there's the whole possibility of organ transplants was radically changed. They started doing it in the 60s. I mean, there are other examples from before, but they started doing it in the 60s, but most of the patients died. In 1980s, they invented a new immunosuppressive drugs, which changed the game, in the sense that the drug, what's the problem? The problem is that you transplant an organ into a person, their body essentially regards it as an infection, as an invasion of cells from another place, and it attacks the cells, it kills the organ, and you're no better than you were before. They had to come up with drugs which essentially suppress the immune system and keep the recipient from rejecting the donor cell. So this happened in the early 80s, and from then on, the question of you know, large scale coronation became a really live one, and the Rabbanim Rashim accepted the sort of general notion that based on, to what I said, on the Mishnah in the Halach, that brainstem death, and I'm not going to go into the details of this because they're technical and we're out of time anyway, but brainstem death, in other words, the death of the part of the brain which deals with basic functioning, breathing, you know, things like that, once that is damaged beyond repair, now obviously a person in that situation is in a coma and is never going to wake up. Once that is, now they have a very specific set of criteria. How do you establish this? I don't know if anyone wants to look it up. It's very easy. You can look it up on the internet. I don't know, there's a whole set of criteria. How do you establish brainstem death? And there's, you know, slightly different opinions as to what exactly counts. And that's but the Rabbanut decided that that is a sufficient criterion for. Considering a person dead, even though their heart is still beating, or they're still breathing, usually, by the way, a person who has reached this state, they die within a couple of days, without any question, they're going to die in a couple of days. It's like a rat. There's a massive breakdown in like a full system failure essentially entails. But you can keep them alive for a couple of days. And that's a radical difference in terms of whether or not you can. Save their organ. Now, remember, this is a big halachic question. We're talking about dinei nefashot in the most extreme way. We're talking about life and death in the most extreme way. But it's very important to remember that if you're machmir one way, you're mekel the other way, right? If you're machmir about what counts as brain death, that means you're being mekel about saving all the people who you could save. Rabbi Shussman asked me to say this, and I didn't really need his encouragement. It seems to me it's a no-brainer on this one. So though I do understand the real sort of the real conservative position of we don't kill people in the name of medicine, right? To save someone's life, you don't kill somebody else. Nevertheless, in a situation of a person who is functionally dead. Right? And the machloket amongst the poskim as to whether they're dead, to be machmir for them for the fact that they're not dead at the cost of saving many people's lives, it seems to me to be the obvious decision is that we should be machmir about pikuach nefesh and mekel about brain death. In a certain sense, I think the question turns on a sort of a general, not specifically, but a general attitude towards medical science. I think a lot of the resistance to accepting brain death is resistance to the notion, to trusting when the doctors say, this person is gone, there's nothing to recover here. Do you trust that? Or do you have sort of a sense of, no, we have our independent system, we're sort of independent of the sort of medical considerations. That being said, and this, I think, is very important. The standards for brain death differ in different places and in different situations, and it's really important. And that's what the next speaker after Rabbi Schwartz speaks is going to tell you about. That when you sign a organ donation card, that you sign that your death is established according to criteria of halachic authorities, and not by just some doctor in the hospital who has an agenda. Right, the halacha of what counts as brain death is not necessarily what every doctor is going to advocate. In fact, in the world today, and certainly in countries in Europe, they actually kill people who, because they want to die or for all kinds of things like that, were people who are truly not dead by almost any standard. So we need to walk the line here, because we do want to maintain the halacha that we don't kill people even to save other people's lives. On the other hand, the question of how dead is dead, I think we can rely on a very large group of poskim who follow the sort of the mainstream medical practice and establish brainstem death as death. I wanted to talk about some other things. I'm going to mention just even though we're over our time, I'm going to mention just in passing. Somebody asked me, "What's the situation with non-Jews?" and this is a very sensitive question. In principle, a lot of these issues are made simpler if we simply harvest organs only from non-Jews. Right? There's no issue, there's no mitzvah kvura for non-Jews, right? There's no issue, maybe isn't an issue of nivula metinim for non-Jews. One second. This is a route which I think is immoral. And I think it's also potentially a chilul Hashem. Not to mention the possible sort of ripple, sort of, so to speak, political repercussions for Am Yisrael. It's true that, you know, in the technical sense, pikuach nefesh does not apply to non-Jews. But in practice, we're mechalel Shabbat for non-Jews every day. Every Shabbos, right? Obviously not every day. And the rhyme and reason for that is to prevent a situation where Jews are regarded as indifferent to the lives of non-Jews, which would be a terrible chilul Hashem. Not to mention that it would actually, you know, inspire, what the halacha word of it is, eva, it would inspire hatred. So in this case, there's this worldwide chesed of organ donation. And if we want to be able to get, we have to be willing to give. And to do anything less is sort of shameful, in my opinion. So the fact of the matter is that if we're willing to be mechallel Shabbat to save non-Jews, I think that it's a lot easier to harvest organs than to be mechallel Shabbat. And the same is true for living donations. Right? Living donations, you don't necessarily have control of where your organ goes. But you're participating in an activity of chesed which does great benefit to someone else, Jewish or not Jewish, not to mention the fact that it does great benefit and is a great kiddush Hashem for all of Am Yisrael. I don't think we should hesitate about that either. That is my final word on that topic. There's a lot of other stuff here. Obviously, this is like the briefest summary of a very, very large and complex topic. But I was only given an hour, and I've already gone over it by 10 minutes. So I'll stop here. If any last questions, if not, then we'll have a mincha. Okay, so let's have a mincha.